consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. It's the RT Soccer Podcast. Good to have you with us. We're joined today by Paul Corrie, also by St. Pat's board member and a man who managed several clubs in the league, Alan Matthews. And as ever, by James O'Toole. Hats off to Piemont United. They've retained the Women's National League title. A big game on Saturday with the title on the line. Shells and Piemont battling it out. And it was Piemont who came from behind to win 3-1. So they've retained their title. We'll come on to that very, very shortly. James, as I mentioned, is with us. James, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Adrian. How are you keeping?
Too bad at all. Have you ever made a motivational video?
Yes, actually I have. I was asked to do one a little while ago for a club. I was asked to help out, actually. Actually, strange enough, it was Stephen Kenny as well. I was asked to help with one or two little pieces for them when they were in Europe. Kind of best wishes kind of videos from people. I remember one of them was Nicky Byrne. Did a best wishes video for the team, and he showed it on the breakfast and stuff like that the morning before the match. So it's nothing new to Stephen, let's put it that way.
And did he give you a job description when it came to the video, or was it just one of those best of luck?
Yeah, just best of luck bits and pieces. If anybody knows Stephen is he's quite a good talker, quite an inspirational talker when he has a team around him. So it was just a case of one or two people reached out and said, can you get a couple of best wishes videos for them? And we sorted one or two out for them and sent it over to them. And as I said, like they just ran them. I think it was a breakfast before their team meeting after breakfast. It was on one of their European games. I can't even remember what game it is now, actually.
Right. Well, we mentioned this, of course, because the FAI have closed their investigation over a video, a very short video, mind you, just less than 3 minutes. Nobody's really seen it outside of the Irish camp, of course. But they've closed their investigations. They've followed a meeting between Stephen Kenny and the FAI's former interim chief executive, Gary Owens. The FAI contacted players and staff. The video apparently showed goals scored against England over the years and a section highlighting the historical context of the relationship between the Republic of Ireland and England. The FAI then said they were satisfied with Stephen Kenny's explanation with regards to the tone and the content of the video. Alan is on the line, as we mentioned, Alan Matthews. Alan, what have you made of all this, the video business?
I don't think it's anything unusual. I think most teams will use some form of video analysis, definitely video inspiration. As James has alluded to there, it's something that Stephen would have done before. Myself and other managers would have done it over the years. I suppose really it is very much geared towards who you're delivering that message to is the key. I think it's been somewhat blown out of proportion. The worrying thing that I take out of this is that member of staff decided that it was inappropriate and went further with it. So, you know, from that end of it, I think that's a worry. The FAI have come out very quickly and addressed it, I believe, and put it firmly to bed now. And I think if we had won a number of those games and had got more positive results, this wouldn't even become a story. The fact that we've not got off to the best of starts in Stephen's reign is given you know, air to those kind of really insignificant issues. If you were to look at it, I think it was probably a misjudgment on Stephen's behalf to deliver what he delivered to the audience. But I think when we come back in March and if we get off to a positive start in the World Cup qualifiers, all of this will be forgotten about. But it's unfortunate, and he can do without it. He's had a terrible run of injuries, a couple of suspensions, and then obviously the COVID issue to deal with in this first number of games. Unprecedented. You know, it's never befallen on any other manager. So it's terrible times. We haven't had the rub of the green. I know the results haven't been good, but you don't need this. So hopefully, as I say, when we come back in March, it'll be long forgotten about.
Why do you say it was a misjudgment on his part? Because clearly he had thought about it in advance and there was a particular message and he wanted to engender, you know, that trademark Irish spirit in advance of a game. And it was a game being played behind closed doors against England, a non-competitive friendly. But why do you call it a misjudgment?
Just basically, I would say that because of the group maybe that he was delivering it to, Adrian, that he possibly didn't read the audience correctly. within that inner circle, that has to be absolute, you know, tight, sacrosanct. Anything that goes on in the team meeting, in the dressing room, that's all under the one banner, that it stays within. And if someone has an issue with it, address it to the manager. Again, I'm only reading media reports. I haven't spoken to anybody from within the camp, or I don't have any knowledge, only from what I've picked up on media reports. But it appears that someone from within the group made representation outside to flag their uncomfortable view of this. And I think that's where it may have been a misjudgment on Stephen's behalf. May have been, as I said. I certainly wouldn't admonish him in regard to doing some kind of motivational video. It depends who you're delivering that video to. You need to know yourself that the audience is totally and utterly, you know, I wouldn't say loyal. I would say that what goes on in a dressing room, as Alan Kelly, if you like, came out and alluded to, he's been in the Irish dressing room for the last 35 years or so. He felt very, very strongly that he wasn't being hung out in any shape or form here, because he's been in that, and what he said was correct. Whatever goes on in the dressing room stays there. And perhaps there was people involved or in that meeting that perhaps haven't got that experience, and they were the ones that took exception to it. So perhaps from that end of it, it may have been misjudged to deliver it to that audience. But as I say, I would like to think that it's well behind them now. And when we come back in March, we get a couple of results and we can go forward.
Paul, what have you made of it all?
Yeah, listen, Agent, I think Alan's spot on with everything he said there. I do believe with groups of people now, you do have to be sensitive to people that are in the room. And maybe it was a slight misjudgment, depending on what was in the video. But it's something that you wouldn't want to get too bogged down on. I know the FEI came out and had a statement last night to say that they'd spoken to some staff members and players and they accepted the explanation. So it is something that you would like to think will kind of fizzle into the background and become more insignificant as time goes by, and we can hopefully start looking forward to some positive news about the team and positive results coming out, because it's been a difficult couple of weeks and months given the absentees and the injuries and the COVID restrictions, and then to top it off with some of the results and the performances haven't been great. It's just been a bit of an unlucky time for Stephen, but it's something I'm sure that he will learn from, and he will probably take a bit more time next time out when he is showing videos or motivational speeches to the group. So I can't imagine it was Westlife that upset somebody with Nicky Byrne, but it's probably
maybe
something that you do just
maybe
need
they weren't
to be a bit sensitive
fans.
To who's in the audience.
As long as they didn't play any of the songs, Paul, they might have been okay.
Alan, I was just thinking, it couldn't have been Westlife that geared me up for games. I'm not sure I'd want James making motivational speeches for a group that I'm involved with.
I agree.
James, you're tuppence worth on this as a man who makes TV and videos and what have you.
I personally think it's much ado about nothing, to tell you the truth. Stephen does this. Like if you remember back to cup finals and stuff like that, if there's been a penalty shootout, what he's done is he's brought his players over in front of the fans and tried to get that atmosphere from the fans to get going and stuff like that. It reminds me of in 2016, he had programme notes at Dundalk, where some of his programme notes are absolutely brilliant, but on one of them he references the Chilcot report and Bloody Sunday while he's a Dundalk manager. He's a very intelligent man, and he puts words that are just wonderful. Some of his programme notes have just been fantastic over the years. I think this wouldn't have made as much news, as the lad said, if the results are going his way, and if there wasn't, I personally think, the upheaval within the FEI. Someone was upset about that, and that's what's made this even a bigger story to even bring it to where it was. But it's something that a line has to be drawn under now, and just let Stephen concentrate on his job. And hopefully when we return to international football in March, results start going his way.
Alan, you said you've used videos and motivational videos in the past. What was your thinking? And is that still a common thing? Would, say, Stephen O'Donnell at St. Pat's this year have used motivational videos?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly did over the years. But there were motivational videos around your own positive play, good moments with your own team, trying to maybe, you know, from an international point of view, Stephen obviously tried to replicate the you know, the Ray Houghton and the Kevin Sheedy and those positive games that we had against England. From my own end of it, even into cup finals or big games, you'd show positive play from your team, good goal scoring action, good defending. And I certainly didn't go and get individuals to come in and work with it. We would have collaged it together. But just kind of get players into a situation of showing them positive phases of play, really getting the crowd involved, looking for the support of the crowd, bringing those kind of pieces in. But ultimately, it's just a very, very quick snapshot. Your work is done on the training ground. Your one-to-one talks with your players, your unit work, and how you want to approach a particular game. A 30-second or a three-minute video is not really going to have an impact. It'll refresh positive outcomes, if you like, and show positive play and how good we can be. But in real terms, it's not a gimmick, but it's way down the list of what's important in preparing your team to go out and perform and to get a right result. It can give certain players a little bit of impetus. It can give players a little bit of a lift before they may go out or get onto the coach or something like that for a game. But ultimately, as I say, it's just an add-on to all the work that you'd have to do on the grass to make sure that your team is prepared. I know from Stephen's point of view, from being involved with the team this year, we would have certainly used it in that context, working on positive play from our own and looking to try and get that feeling back into the dressing room after a good performance. But as I say, the bulk of it is done on the training ground and on the actual formation and structure of the team. An add-on like that is really just to give someone maybe a last-minute G-up. But it's been used and it'll continue to be used, I think, across all kind of sports. I mean, our rugby colleagues, I'm sure, used something prior to the game against England the other day. It may not have worked for them. They could have used something similar 2 years ago, possibly beat England. It wasn't because of that or not because of that that they would have won the game.
Yeah, Paul, it's an area that I know that you've a special interest in. But as a player, did you benefit from that kind of motivation from videos being shown in advance of maybe a big game?
I think with it, you know, players and individuals, Adrian, as a whole, source motivation from different areas. And I was somebody who wouldn't really, not that I wouldn't buy in, but I wouldn't have got a huge amount out of, say, a motivational speech or a motivational video. I would have been much more based along the lines of what Alan was saying there. It's actually reinforcing the positive clips of my own play and seeing good things that I had done and I guess just building that bit of inner belief before I go out to set out in a pitch to just remind myself of what it is I am capable of and give me confidence to then go express myself on a match day. But then there are other people, Adrian, who love to have music blaring in their ears. They love to have motivational speeches. They like to hear from the very best and see what they've done, and they'll seek a little bit of motivation from that point of view. But it's all about, like Alan said, you're looking for that maybe 0.5% or 1% to just get you geared up that little bit more before you set out on the pitch. I personally was probably not somebody who needed to be geared up too much. It was more just about myself and focusing on myself and ensuring that I was in the right frame of mind to go out and perform on the pitch. And it's just that society at the moment. We have a number of different personalities. We've extroverts, we've introverts, we've people who consume information and think in certain ways that they just need to know what sets them up for success when they set out on the pitch, and that can come in a number of different forms.
Yeah. Alan, can I just ask you about your days as a manager? I mean, obviously you're still very much involved with the management team at St. Pat's, but how much thought in advance of a match would you give to your pre-match chat with the players before a game, or indeed even at halftime as the match is ebbing towards halftime? At what point did you start thinking about, here's what I'm going to say and these are the buttons I need to press with the players?
Yeah, well, certainly in a match, in the lead up to the game, you'd look on last week's performance, see what you'd need to maybe try and improve on and correct and try and do better. Obviously, take on the board the strengths and weaknesses of the team that you're going to play and come up with a strategy on the pitch that you think would enable you to get the 3 points. As you were coming in then towards the end of the week, maybe your last session before the game, you'd concentrate and focus on set pieces, do one-to-ones, talk to players about who they were likely to be playing against the next day, give their strengths and weaknesses. And then on the day of the game, you'd sit down really and just think about, okay, what message do you want? What emotions do you need to kind of try and park and maybe to try and lift on certain people? And try and couch it in a way that you focus on the process and what you've done during the week the process that you would have worked on. You would have had one-to-ones with certain players during that week about who they were likely to be playing against, their strengths, what they like to do, what they might be weak on, and then formulate that into a kind of a very, very brief sum before you go out onto the pitch. You still need to give players, I think, a bit of an emotional lift as to why we're going to play this game, how we're going to play the game, and how we want to try and get the positive result. But still focus really, really more so on your preparation, your focus on doing what's right at the right moments in the game, and to be actually very much tactically and technically aware of what you need to do, as opposed to banging the table and throwing cups and that. You can only do that so often to maybe get a reaction. So I believe it has to be somewhat methodical, and also there has to be a bit of lift in it as well. And from time to time then, in matches, you would have your plan. You'd have three or four things that you want to really focus on that you're not doing well in the first half, that you'd talk with your staff and you'd pull together for a minute or two before you go in and address the players, and just again try and affect the game as opposed to being emotional about it, and try to be somewhat clinical as to what you need to improve on, or if you're doing something well, to re-emphasise the positives to those players that are doing that well, and as a group, if we can continue to that we'd get the right result. Some of it works, Adrian, some of it doesn't work, but I think over the number of years that I've been managing and coaching, I think players now, Paul has already alluded to, they want information, they want data, they want to know why they're doing something. When I was playing, you did what you were told, you didn't question. When I started off coaching and managing, it was kind of beginning to turn, beginning to change. Now players want to know information, they want to know it, and they want to, what you're saying to them can be backed up. Once you can provide that, the team talk and the kind of inspirational team talk, they're not gone, but they're very much, I think, a thing of the past.
Paul, on a broader level, in terms of Stephen Kenny and the start, 8 games played, yet to pick up a win, just 1 goal scored. We've got the World Cup draw coming up very soon in the next couple of weeks, but it's a very challenging situation at the moment. He'll be hoping for a clear run in 2021, but it's been difficult.
Yeah, it's been really difficult, Adrian, and we would have touched on that last week, and that, you know, the squad has been blighted with both injuries and with COVID rule-outs. But I guess I was just reflecting after the Bulgaria game and the games that he has had. I think if you're looking for positivity, you probably look back to the Slovakia game, which was the most important game in that group of fixtures. And we were a bit unlucky that night. I would say that was probably the best reflection of the group of players we have and the potential of what we could maybe do next year under Stephen Kenny. We created a number of chances that night. I think we probably should have won the game. We just couldn't really force a goal. And maybe that's the fixture that you look to if you're looking in a really optimistic frame of mind. I do believe there are certain things that need to be worked on. I would have mentioned it last week, in that being extremely expansive and open against an English side is probably a bit naive for me. And even when you're 2-3-0 down, you're rolling the ball out to your centre halves and your fullbacks, which hasn't really worked for the previous 60 minutes, to continue to do that for me is a bit naive. Yes, we want to play football. Yes, we want to play through the thirds. But every now and again, throw it up to a big man in Adamida. And that's not a hoof. It's just a longer pass, and it's mixing up your game and get runners off him and get us further up the pitch. So the style of play has improved. The structure of the team has improved. We look as if we have more of an identity with and without the ball, which is what everybody was crying out for. But there's still a lot of work to be done. I guess in the last 2 to 3 weeks, what we have learned is that we don't have a huge crop of players to choose from. And without being disrespectful to the League of Ireland, I thought having 3 League of Ireland players in the squad is something that you would not normally see. And that was probably a testament of how few players we have playing at the top level over in the UK. But the structures are there. We definitely have an identity. When we get all the players back fit, hopefully next year, and when we get a proper run at it, and when people are used to the system and the environment that Stephen has created, hopefully there is, I guess, the foundations and the environment in order for the players to be successful. We just need to start scoring goals, and we need to start getting results.
And Alan, before we leave this topic, people have spoke about the need for patience, which, you know, that's fair enough, but you do need to see positive results. It's fine and dandy talking about a footballing philosophy and a vision for Irish football and the way football should be played, but it is a results business ultimately.
It is, absolutely, Adrian, and that's what Stephen will be judged on. As I say, and it said earlier, we have come through an unprecedented period where he has been absolutely decimated and you know, deprived of a squad that would, I believe, go out and do us a little bit more justice than what we've picked up over the last 8 games. The Slovakia game certainly gave a view as to how it could look when we have everybody available. And I just believe that if we can get off, if we can get a favourable draw and we can get off to a half-decent start in the next campaign, I think Stephen will be a success. I certainly wouldn't, you know, certainly support and believe it's the right way to go about it. But I think he will learn as he goes along within the job that a philosophy really will only get you so far. It will become results. And as Paul said, just small changes and tweaks to the team. I noticed from the England game where Darren Randolph was rolling it out to Shane Duffy in the, you know, the 70th minute and we were going nowhere. We played Wales. That never happened. Randolph adjusted, pushed the back four up, threw a few up. We still lost the game. I know that we didn't win the game, rather, but I know that at the end of it, it's probably just a very small indication that Stephen will have picked up on these things and he'll learn as he goes along. But ultimately, it will be results. And if we can get some positive results, which we all hope for at the start of the World Cup campaign, I'd be very, very hopeful. There is a good crop of players coming through. They need to get more league experience and get more game time with their clubs in the England Premier Division. Like, we're looking at Aaron Connolly being one of our go-to guys. I think he's only played a handful of games in total for Brighton, and a lot of them coming off the bench. So we have to give these guys, if we can, a little bit of time. But I would be hopeful that when we get everybody fit, we'd be capable of getting the right results.
Okay, all right, let's move on, lads, shall we? Penalties, lots and lots of penalties at Rainy Finn Park on Friday night. The cup holder Shamrock Rovers came from behind to win 3-2 against Finn Harps. Pretty dramatic evening. Harps led 2-0 at the break through goals from Barry McNamee and Stephen Fullan. But then referee Rob Hennessy awarded 3 penalties, 2 of them converted by Aaron McInniff. Graham Burke then grabbed the winner, leaving Finn Harps feeling sick and sore. Here's their manager, Ollie Horgan.
Ollie, can you begin to explain how you're feeling after that match tonight?
Well, I'd rather not, Eric. I've just spoken to the officials in there. There's a lot of anger. Not so much for me or Paul. You know, we've seen these type of decisions. For the players, they're devastated. You know, we were 2-0 up and in full control against the best team in the country, and 3 penalties, would it be in 4 minutes, Eric?
Yeah.
I looked at them back. The second one, yeah, he put his hand up as a penalty. First one, I can't see any foul. The third one, Graham Burke has stood on Mark Antony. He's marred. And the referee gives 3 penalties along with the linesman in 4 minutes. The disappointing part, and where I can't complain, is that at 2-2 we're still right in the game and we gave away a third. We can only blame ourselves for that. And then from there to the end, we were the better side from that. But for that period in the second half where we were 2-0 up to 3-2 down, you know, with ourselves to blame for the third and maybe other people for the other two.
And you'll be hurting at defeat and going out of the cup, but this can't take away from an excellent season and what you've achieved in the league.
Look, that's gone, Eric. Like, I mean, we had a huge opportunity to go into a semi-final of the cup at home, you know, to Derry or Sligo. Massive opportunity. There's not a huge amount between, you know, Derry and Sligo and then us. You know, anything could have happened in a semi-final and you find yourself in the final, but that's gone. And sometimes when you're up there and you have, you know, what Shamrock Rovers have achieved, you know, decisions go your way. Sometimes when you're down at the bottom as we are, they don't. However, I can't fault any of their lads in there and the management team. They give everything. They're devastated in their Eric. You know, they're like, it's not a moral victory. That day is gone. You know, I hope. It's just, you know, it's difficult. It's all right for me and Paul. We're hardy and we've gone through this year in, year out. Some of them lads are hurting in there and feel that they were hard done by, not by Shamrock Rovers, by maybe the people in charge. But look, you view them and the public can view them and the listeners can view them to see whether I'm imagining things or not.
An exasperated Ollie Horgan there speaking to Eric White after that 3-2 loss for Harps on Friday night to Shamrock Rovers. We'll get the thoughts of the lads very shortly on that game. But Shamrock Rovers through to the last four. Their assistant coach is Glenn Cronin.
I thought first that we didn't start the game. We didn't hear our levels. And they know that. The players second half came out, I thought we were excellent and we got a bit of luck, but really controlled the game second half, I thought, and showed what we're capable of.
three penalties in the space of 4 minutes. It's pretty unheard of. Did you have a view on the three penalties?
I didn't. I seen Graham going down. I seen the handball, but I didn't see enough of Graham going down or the other one before that. So now look, it doesn't happen very often, does it? But we can't control that. All we can do is do what Aaron did and step up and take them and be brave and put them away.
And it's a game changer then, isn't it? The momentum's with you.
Yeah, it definitely gives you belief, doesn't it? And it knocks a bit out of them. So, look, we knew if we scored a goal, we were right back in the game. So, that was the aim. And whether it was through a penalty or anything, didn't matter. Just once we got ourselves back in the game.
And Aaron McAniff, after missing the first penalty, it took a bit of courage from him, didn't it, to step up almost within a minute and take another one?
Yeah, you'd never question Aaron's character. He's top man, top professional, and he's never in doubt. You know, he knew no one was going to get the ball off him. So. And that's Aaron, and he steps up composure and gets us right back in the tie.
Glenn Cronin there. Alan Matthews, you could really hear the hurt in the voice of Ollie Horgan there when he spoke to Eric after the game, and understandable as a manager, I'm sure you'd empathise, you know, with the way he was feeling after the game and the way it played out.
Yeah, absolutely. His team were very much in the ascendancy. They were excellent in the first half. As Glenn said, their Rovers never really showed up, and Finn Harps took full advantage of it. And it's tough to take, given, you know, the circumstances that they found themselves in, to be given up three penalties within such a very, very quick couple of minutes. The game changes totally on that. And Finn Harps would have really sensed that they, as Ollie would have said, they really had a chance to push themselves to go all the way, to get to a final, because the pitch isn't great up there at the best of times. It was to its usual at this stage of the year, last Friday, so it wouldn't have been any surprise to Shamrock Rovers going up what the pitch was going to be like. And in fairness to Harps, their momentum towards the end of the season, they beat us up there a couple of weeks before the end of the season. And we were 2-0 down. We got back to 2-2, and they showed resilience and real belief to go on and push on, and they beat us 3-2. So they would have certainly seen this as an opportunity to have some real, you know, take something really positive from the season and possibly get to a final. Hard to take. I looked at it, I was watching it, and I looked at it, and the Graham Bourke, when it looked like a penalty, maybe Ollie, from where he would be standing, he might have seen there was no contact made. The handball seemed to be one as well. So I think they were probably penos, but hard to take. But I think what he'd be more disappointed is that overall, they were 2-0 up at half-time in a game. They probably should have been able to push on and see it through. But you give great credit to Rovers. They've won the league. They've gone through the league unbeaten. They'd gone up there when it was put up to them, and it was put up to them into a situation where it's 45 minutes now to go and try and get themselves to a final to see if they can go and do a double on this. But they answered, and in fairness to them, once they got the goal, they pushed on and pushed on. They tried to play their game. They tried to play their normal game. And that was a tough, tough place to go from 2-0 down to go back to 3-2. So you give them credit. But for Ollie, he's right. Moral victories, he won't take that at all. I know Ollie a long, long time. He's a great fella. He's a great manager. And I think he'll look back now and reflect that the last 6 weeks of the season was a terrific performance for them. He'll probably be disappointed that they didn't bring that to play earlier in the season. But maybe if there was more than 18 games, Finn Harps wouldn't have found themselves down the tail end of the season at the end of the year. But he'd be happy with the way they've responded. And again, look back and say, well, that was one that slipped the other night.
James, you've pored over the video. You've rewound it a few times. The penalties, what do you reckon?
First one, scales gone down in the box, not a penalty. Two players just running in beside each other, defenders marking them. I think the pitch itself doesn't help because he just loses his footing, he goes down. The one thing I will say is that players always ask referees, managers always ask, Alan will tell you this as well, take a bit of time over it, make your decision, and then make your decision. But not on Friday night. It was just a case of, there you go, penalty straight away. Referee blew within seconds of scales falling over. The second handball is a penalty because the arm is up and the way he's actually putting his body towards the block of the ball. But as has been mentioned before, if the first penalty isn't given, the second penalty doesn't happen either. The third one, I think Burke sees a goalkeeper coming out and just does what most players do these days, sees an opportunity to go over and gets a penalty. Fair play to Aaron McAniff for scoring the both of them. The one I will say, and I've looked at it several times, is about 10 minutes after that, Ronan Finn controls the ball with his hand in the Rovers box. It is more a penalty than the other three penalties, and the referee waves play away on that one. So they've got a couple of them right, or they've got one right anyway, but they've definitely got a couple wrong. And I think anybody who watched the game on Friday night, I don't think it was a case of Shamrock Rovers didn't turn up for the first 45 minutes. I think Finn Harps played really, really well. And they adjusted to the pitch and what they were playing in, the weather. They didn't try and play nice patterns of football. They just knew the conditions they were playing in. The first goal that Barry McNamee scores is a wonderful goal. Mm-hmm. And they could have got a second one shortly after that. So I thought they played excellent. And it's just gutted for Ollie and all the staff up there, because it was, as he said, it was their chance to have a home tie in the semi-final of an FAI Cup, something that none of us would have thought at the beginning of the season.
And a home tie against either Sligo Rovers or Derry City, who meet in the remaining quarter-final on Wednesday night. But Paul Curry, Shamrock Rovers rolling on. They're on the hunt for that double.
They are, Adrian, and that was probably their get-out-of-jail-free card there on Friday night. I thought, I would actually agree with James, I thought Finn Harps were really good in the first half. I didn't think Rovers were quite at it. I think there's probably one or two players now who could have even potentially played themselves out of the side. Like, when you go up to Finn Harps and it's a wet, windy night, the last thing you do is give away set pieces. And Lee Grace was woefully at fault for the second goal, giving away a stupid free kick that led to the second goal. And from there, it looked like a real uphill battle. I do think Hennessy has had a bit of a stinker, given that first one, Scalesy fell over like a sack of potatoes. But given how difficult it is to go up to Finn Park, to have that heart and to have that guts and almost the belief to go on and win that game will really please Stephen Bradley. And it's probably not a result that Shamrock Rovers would have been able to graft out 18 months ago. And it's a testament to both the players and the staff that they were able to wrestle themselves out of that situation. I believe they're probably a good bit better than what else is out there at the moment. I think with the squad of players they have, like the fact that they were able to take Grace and Lafferty off and bring on Pico Lopez and Sean Cavanagh just gives you an idea of what strength and depth they have. And I know I said last week that I fancy Sligo to potentially put it up to them if they were to get through, but that would be a shock if they were to go out. And they just look as if they're going from strength to strength. Winning is very much a habit. They're hungry for more titles, and it's going to take a serious team and a serious performance to stop them at this point.
Okay, well, maybe Dundalk could be that team. They were at their best, certainly on Friday night, registering a 4-1 win over Bohemians at Dalyman Park. A very impressive win for Dundalk. Here's their boss, Filippo Giovagnoli.
I'm happy for the players, and I'm happy for us too, because it's a good statement.
David McMillan really put his hand up tonight. He showed what he can do for you. Brilliant assist for the first goal, and then he scored two great goals himself.
Yeah, he did. He had actually 10 days, really good 10 days of practice. And we know the value of Dave McMillan. They just need to, you know, to work, to rest when is the time, and to prepare, and then he performed. Like I said, I'm not surprised about the performance of anyone.
I know it's been tough for you in terms of the amount of games you had to play quickly, but have the European games helped your cohesion and your sharpness?
Listen, our team is really, we have cohesion. We are a family. We work hard every day. It was just, you know, unfortunately, we had to dedicate time. Unfortunately, no, it's not unfortunately, it's a privilege. Dedicate time a lot to the Europe, and this create problem in the league. We knew it, but listen, now we are in a good shape, and we hope to finish well the season.
Alan, what have you made of Dundalk this season? Because obviously their league season, their league campaign rather fizzled out. They're still involved in the Europa League. They've got Rapid Vienna to play on Thursday night. But that performance on Friday night was a reminder of how good Dundalk can be.
They were really, really good. And they certainly deserved that victory. And they were very, very sharp, quick to everything. Got a good start. Was it the third goal, McMillan's goal? Yeah, it may have run over, but they totally dominated Bowes. And over the course of the season, we've played them twice. We've drawn with them twice. They've probably not been to the level of consistency that they'd want to be, and what enabled them to win the league last year and to be 1-2 for the last 7 or 8 seasons. So, I mean, they've certainly dipped. But their European adventure, if you like, I think will add and enable them to grow and develop and come back again next year. I think Rovers have been the best side and the most consistent, and they've been worthy winners of the league. But I think Dundalk now will get the benefit of maybe being able to play one game a week for the next couple of weeks. They'll certainly have their eyes firmly fixed on getting to another cup final. And whilst they may not get too many points or come out of that European campaign with points, the experience that the players will have gained playing at the level that they've been at and coming up against different opponents who are a couple of levels up above the League of Ireland, that will really, I think, enable them to make a serious challenge next season to get back to that. But more importantly, I think they'll look at the Cup as being the opportunity for them to get silverware. And I think if you looked at it, if they were to give up the league and told at the start of the season, they wouldn't be champions, but they would get to the Europa League qualifiers and would maybe win a senior trophy, they may have settled for that. So they've been, I suppose, able to deal with the issues that have been thrown at them from a managerial upheaval after they exited the Champions League, to not being able to play week in, week out, to again having to play such a high number of games in a short period of time to squeeze them in for the league to finish on time, etc. So that kind of didn't help them. But I believe now you might see a performance more akin to what we've seen on Friday night over the next couple of games that they have.
Yeah, I think Dave McMillan impressed me massively. It shows that once Hoban's not there, they do have someone who's able to step into his boots. I think his ball for the first goal that sets the roll go on Friday night for Michael Duffy to score, just from the outside of his boot, round two players. Duffy's run is excellent, and 2 minutes in, you know, Dundalk are off, and the old Dundalk is back. I think it's great to see Michael Duffy playing as well. I'm sure if you see anybody like that in front of you, I think McMillan hasn't got the game time he probably deserves, but now they've got a semi-final against Athlone to look forward to. I'm sure he'll play in that as well as those Europa League games, and I think they seem to be hitting form just at the right time, especially for their first bit of silverware, because it's been so long since they haven't finished the season with some silverware, and I think that'll be a great finish to the season if they get to a cup final.
And Paul, for Bohemians, very disappointing way to conclude the season. What's been a terrific season for Keith Long and Trevor Crawley and all involved with Bohemians, that was a very poor end to it.
Yeah, it was, and I'm sure they're bitterly disappointed, because there's been serious progress over the last 24 months there, both in terms of, I guess, the structures of the club, Keith and Trevor nailing down their futures, the players that they've brought through as well. And I'm sure, given the fact that they've qualified for Europe for the past two seasons, they would have loved to at least get to the cup final. Like, they've pushed well in the league over the last 2 years, and I'm sure they would have been eyeing the cup competition to potentially get to the final. And with the fact that they would have played at Athlone in the semis, you would all have backed them to get there. But a disappointing performance. You know, Dundalk were really, really at it, so it's hard to be too critical of Bohemians. But I think when they sit down in 2-3 weeks' time, they reflect on what they've achieved and the players that they've brought through again and the base that they have, you know, Keith and Trevor will be more than hopeful and optimistic heading into next season. They probably just need to fine-tune one or two areas in order to push that little bit more to hopefully get to a cup final next year, or maybe go a bit further in the league.
Okay, we leave the cup for now. Of course, the cup quarterfinal between Sligo Rovers and Derry takes place on Wednesday, and the two semi-finals scheduled for this coming Sunday afternoon. Well, in fact, Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers or Derry is on Sunday afternoon. Athlone against Dundalk will take place at 7:05 on Sunday evening at the Athlone Town Stadium. Alan, from a St. Pat's perspective, putting that Pat's hat back on, your thoughts on the season? I presume people have been reflecting at the club, Stephen O'Donnell and the management team, on how it played out. And obviously, we have to factor in all the disruptions that were, you know, right throughout the season, be it COVID-related or whatever. A very difficult season for every club in the League of Ireland. But how do the people involved with St. Pat's sum up the campaign?
Yeah, I think you hit it there, Adrian, yourself. A difficult season for everybody involved in the League of Ireland. When we kicked back last January in pre-season, we were very optimistic. We put together a new group of players. It would have been Stephen's first full season with the club. And we were very optimistic. Started off okay. And then after, what, four games? I think we had four games, everyone had five. We're put into quarantine for 4 months or so. And that knocked the stuffing out of a lot of clubs, and some more than others. But ultimately, from our own point of view, it stopped any momentum that we were trying to build. Guys left the country, they went home, they were given plans to work on. And then without any kind of surety as to when the league was coming back, the European clubs were given dispensation to kick back training, and we had to come back a couple of weeks after that. So we never really got going and got a good flow going, we felt. When we came back, we played actually Dundalk, and our first game started off okay, but then didn't back it up. And I think that was our Achilles heel all season, if you like, that we were inconsistent and we didn't back up good result after good result. We kind of leveled out a little bit. And whilst we then got back last 8-6 games or so, we found ourselves in our own COVID crisis, where one of the players was tested positive, and we were shut down for 2 weeks. So, you know, that knocked us back. We were down in Cork. We'd beaten Cork, and we had, again, backed up a couple of performances. We'd beaten Shells the week before, and then we're put into quarantine for a couple of weeks. So it was a very truncated, disjointed season from our point of view, which I think was evidenced by the lack of consistency that we showed. And then our last couple of games, we were potentially going to challenge for a European spot, but as well, there was no real margin for error for the clubs that were behind us. So the league, there was no middle ground in the league as such. So they say, whilst we are disappointed finishing where we finished, we feel that if there was more than the 18 games played, probably would have had a better showing on the points per game, and would have finished up in a little better spot. But look, it's been a very difficult season for everybody. And like, without fans, football without fans, it's really a completely different kettle of fish. And we can only be thankful for the supporters who you know, stayed with us, watched us remotely, continued to be season ticket holders, etc., who got behind the club in various different ways. And hopefully, whilst there's no start date, etc., hopefully when we do come back next season, we'll be able to get some supporters back into the grounds and kickstart the league again. Because I think it's proven, I think people need sport, need football, needs live football. And I think if we can get back next season, when we do get back with some crowds, and then hopefully as the season evolves, we may start opening up fully, we'll see an improved performance from ourselves. But as I say, it's all to play for. Again, I think all clubs last year went through so much difficulty that Rovers are worthy champions, definitely. And whoever wins the cup will be worthy winners of that. But I think it'll be consigned very quickly, I think, to the history books, and we'll try and look forward to the 21 season.
Yeah, Al, I think it's one of those things, they need to sort this quickly to tell us when the season's coming back for you guys, based in teams, being able to sign players and stuff like that. We spoke to Daniel Lambert a little while ago, and he suggested the Bows were actually planning the start of the 2021 season without fans in the ground. Same might happen with Derry having no fans in the ground. How do you guys even think about budgets prior to a season like this? And putting together a team that Stephen would want on the pitch to play the way St. Pat's want to play?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Very difficult, James. You know, you're coming now into licensing period, and non-financials need to be in by the end of November. Your financials then need to be in by the end of December, and then your audit accounts, etc., need to be in first week or two in January. So it's very, very difficult to plan and to, you know, to strategize as to what level of income you'll receive. We don't know. We're banking on the fact that we will have some crowd coming in, but when will that happen? As it stands at the moment, I don't think it's been announced. Is there going to be a sponsor for the league? Is there a sponsor? Will we continue to get, or will clubs continue to be able to facilitate the employee wage subsidy? Will that continue through for players? The PFAI, the season has been truncated. Players' contracts going to be extended for the end of this season. Is there going to be a change in window for next season? When will next season start? These are questions that we just need answers to, and nobody has the answer to them all. It's going to be a combination of all the stakeholders coming together and trying to piece this one that it'll come out in the right side. It's been very difficult. Daniel Lambert and Bohemians, fair play to them. They're, you know, looking at a second season in Europe. They probably are cushioned by the funding that they may have got in for Matt Doherty. Other clubs probably are in a stronger position than ourselves and a number of other clubs. So it's very, very difficult to know when you're going to kick back, when you're going to start training, and when you can sign players. We are trying to tie down some of our own players now at the moment. We're trying to talk to these and try and move along as normal. But it's very difficult to do that. So we're not alone in that. And I think no one has the answers to all of these questions. I think it's going to really take a lot of people pulling together and sitting around. And hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. The season, even now as we speak, I mean, originally the season was due to be finished at this stage. Now the cup final, I think, has been pushed back to the 6th of December or so. Is that correct? So when we came back from our COVID break, per se, we were looking at the first week in November for everything to be finished. And then I think the cup to finish the week after due to, I wouldn't say unforeseen circumstances. I think Derry had a couple of hits with COVID. We have, Shamrock Rovers have, I think Bohemians have. So these shouldn't have come as a surprise, but they did. They truncated the season even more so. So they say, hopefully this will be behind us and people will have learned from it. And we can look forward to next year, but it's going to be a different landscape. Financially, I think all clubs have been impacted and it's going to be a different landscape. I just hope that it's one that we can work together and get back to seeing crowds come through.
Presumably, Alan, though, discussions are ongoing. Is there even a mooted start date for a season in 2021?
We haven't heard, but I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. We would be anticipating in or around the same time as last season, Adrian. So to work from a training point of view and from a planning point of view, you'd be looking at kicking back in around mid-February. It may be extended back. So we're trying to give players programs to work in the off season with a view to coming back in the first week in January to start a normal pre-season. But that's everything is kind of given with a health warning that's subject to change. So that's what we're working off at the moment. We may be foolish in doing that, but that's what we're planning on coming back around the same time as we did last season.
Paul, it's very difficult for clubs and those who run clubs to plan and operate in a vacuum, because at the moment there's no clear roadmap for 2021, and it is difficult for everybody involved because we remain in level 5 lockdown.
And I'm sure, you know, Alan and everybody at St. Pat's is looking at where they can, I guess, strengthen and where you can improve in order to get yourselves to the next level, and what players you can bring in, and how you strengthen the squad. But at this moment in time, it is ultimately about survival, and it's ensuring that we can keep our clubs in that best case scenario for hopefully when we do return to, you know, normality and we have crowds back in grounds. And I would say this period of time, Adrian, has probably just re-emphasised how important fans and how important live football is to us all. You know, getting fans through the gates is what keeps these clubs going, and it's, you know, a main facility and livelihood for a number of people. But I can only imagine the stresses and the complications around what is going on and what next season is going to look like. So reiterating what Alan has said there, the sooner there's a bit of clarity with regards to support and financial support that may be coming in the ways of the club, and also a bit of structure in regards to when the league is going to start, will most certainly put a number of clubs at ease, and also players at ease, Adrian. You know, a number of players are very passionate about their sport. This is what they live for. This is their main income stream. They will need to know too, so that they can begin planning. And I just think the sooner we hear about that, hopefully it's not too long or away, the better for everybody involved in the game.
All right. Listen, we mentioned it at the outset. Piemont United retained their Women's National League title, and they did so with a game in hand. They have a game to spare. They were one down at half-time against fellow title contender Shelburne on Saturday evening, but a couple of goals from Anya Gorman and also one from Karen Duggan helped them to a 3-1 win. Piemont crowned champions after the game. Cara Kelly caught up with Anya Gorman.
It's obviously extra special when you do it back-to-back, and it's such an amazing team and squad and club as well. So, yeah, especially just the way it kind of panned out as well. We went 1-0 down, really had to dig deep and show our character.
it looked like things weren't going your way in the first half. Shelburne really dominated the game, but what happened at halftime to make you really come out in the second half and get ahead?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a cup final feel in the first 10, 15 minutes. Everything was a bit hectic and all over the place. I think coming into the second half, we started to get a little bit of rhythm. And then obviously we knew we'd more gears on us and came out of halftime in a bit of a blooper of a goal, but look, we just had to dig in then and keep showing our character, and we got the reward in the end.
You found the net to get the equaliser. You must have been delighted with that.
Yeah, like, I think I just put the ball down and Megan says, you're going to get us back in the league here now. And it was just nice to hit the back of the net. It doesn't matter who scores once we get the goals in and we win.
And it was great to have such a convincing win, to get three goals in the second half. It really was brilliant.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of relief when the third goal goes in, because, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen, especially when they're applying pressure and making subs and have really good attacking players.
And you have the Senior Cup as well to look forward to, a final in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I think so. It's really exciting, isn't it? Like, we've had the Champions League and all these top games coming in, and we still have the cup final left. So, yeah, we're looking to do the double and finally bring that FAI Cup home.
Yeah, that's Áine O'Gorman speaking to Cara Kelly. Great achievement by Peamount United, James, retaining their title. They've got the double to go for now as well, but a very good win for them coming from behind to retain their title.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I mentioned it yesterday as well on my Twitter account about Ireland's fullback, Áine O'Gorman, getting a couple of goals. Mm-hmm. she's off to a flyer. It's great, though, because you can see Steph Roach is there as well. She seems to be happy back playing football as well. Coming off the disappointment of losing on penalties to Glasgow City, they really have hit the ground running. A cup final to look forward to in Tallaght Stadium. They're in form. The good news is, though, Cork City are obviously in form as well on the other end, a couple of wins as well. So hopefully that cup final sets up a great day. But it's great to see Peamount back and winning trophies again. And great for Áine as well. Two goals on the day is absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely. Okay, lads, we'll leave it there. Before we let you go, Alan, I just have to ask you about Longford Town. Obviously, I'm sure you were conflicted last week with Shelburne being relegated, but Longford Town, a club with whom you enjoyed so much success, a couple of FAI Cups back in the early 2000s. But your thoughts on Longford Town being promoted?
I was at the game last week, Adrian, and I have to say Longford fully deserved the victory. As you rightly said, I would have had great times and great memories with Longford, and I spent a lot of time, happy days as well, with Shelburne. But ultimately on the day, Longford were worthy winners. And I am delighted that the club are back, because they've got a hard core of people at that football club who have been there before I came and went, and are still there, and they work diligently to make Flankhair Park, the City Calling Stadium, I think as it's called now.
Bishopsgate.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, Bishopsgate. James has corrected me a couple of times on that before as well. So.
Or as we used to call it, the Flan Zero. That's Flan what we Zero. Used to call it. One of the best grounds in the country. Seamus Murray doing the grounds, people working on making sure that the hospitality area, etc. It's improved year on year. So those people, it's brilliant to have them back. Dara and Johnny, I both signed them as players for Longford Town. So I'm delighted for them that they're able to be seen to lead the team back. For Charles, a lot of the people at the back office at the club and the background of the club are still there, and Joe Casey in particular, who I know is stepping down as chairman. Very, very hard for them to be going back to the First Division. But on the day, Longford fully deserved the victory, and hats off to them, and I wish them well. I think Shells will come back. I think it's going to be a tough one for them next year, because the likes of Galway and Cork will also have ideas of getting into the Premier Division. But on the day, Longford fully deserved it, and I'm delighted that they're back in the Premier Division.
All right, chaps, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks to Alan Matthews, also to Paul Curry, and as ever, James O'Toole. For me, Adrian Eames. Until next week, bye-bye.